what would you do? How many of you have seen the television show called What Would You Do? It's kind of like a new version of Candid Camera. They set hypothetical scenarios on hot topics such as parenting or elderly abuse or teens in trouble. And then they set up cameras and they watch to see how people react in those moments. Now, I remember one show that I watched where people were waiting in line to buy tickets for a play or a movie. There were about 20 or 25 people waiting in line to buy these tickets, and they're all queued up very politely, all standing in one line, when suddenly someone cuts to the front of the line. Now, we all know what cutting in line means, right? Yes. So this person cuts into the front of the line. No one knew them. No one was holding a place for them. Now, some of the people who were waiting in line were cool about it. They just kind of stood there and let the person cut in line, and they kind of smiled and nodded and looked at each one another kind of indulgently, like, oh, you know, they don't know the rule in society that you have to queue up, so they let them in line. And some people were not so nice. Some people were angry that someone would dare to flaunt the rules of society, this queuing up rule. And some spoke up on behalf of all the people who'd been waiting in line. They were kind of sticking up for their brothers and sisters in the queue. Now, the producers and the cameras waited to see how people would react. And if you've ever watched this show or you remember watching Candid Camera from way back when, people are all different. We all respond differently to different scenarios, different stimulus. Some of us can be very kind and very polite. Some of us get a little defensive. Some of us protect the kind of the ethos of the group. Now, this same individuality in responding to a moment or a scenario was true for the first disciples as well. And like John Quinones on What Would You Do, let me set the story and tell you the backstory of where we are today on Easter Sunday. The disciples' teacher, their rabbi or their rabboni, after walking with them for 3 years, modeling and teaching for them how to create a new world based upon justice and peace and love for one another, gets arrested and unfairly charged with a crime. He will be beaten and eventually dies painfully on a cross, only to be buried in an unmarked tomb. 3 days later, after the religious holiday weekend of Passover is ended, three of his students, or his disciples, as they were known back then, decide to go to the unmarked tomb. The first we see is a woman named Mary, who walks alone while it is still dark. Now remember, cemeteries back in those days, they were in bad neighborhoods. And here is Mary Magdalene, walking alone at night in the dark to this tomb, this unmarked grave, only to find the covering door stone removed and the body missing. Thinking that grave robbers had removed the stone to steal the corpse, she runs back in alarm to tell the other disciples. She sees Peter and the beloved disciple first, and she tells them what she's seen. And they go to the tomb to see for themselves. Eventually, they even begin to run. The beloved, of course the fastest, gets there first and peers in to see the wrappings of the body, but no body, and also sees that there is something rolled up at the head, but he's afraid to go in. Peter, on the other hand, decides to go into the tomb to see for himself. He sees the body wrappings lying there, sees the cloth that had been on his teacher's head off to the side by itself. So what does he do? Now, admittedly, Peter's response is hard to understand. Is he trying to make up for denying Jesus the day of the crucifixion 3 times? Is that why his apathy is so apparent? Maybe he's jealous of the beloved disciple. Does he remember Jesus raising Lazarus? And now he's wondering, what if it's happened again? And this is the point at which the beloved disciple decides to go in and see what's happened to their teacher. As he does, he sees that their teacher is indeed gone from the tomb. So what does the beloved disciple do? He is the one who models belief. Not understanding how or why, the beloved disciple instantly believes that God has worked a miracle. He doesn't ask any questions. He believes immediately that this is a miracle done by God's hand. The beloved disciple sees the possibilities for God to redeem even death by crucifixion. But what about the first to go to the tomb? What about Mary Magdalene? What does she do? Arriving after the other two disciples have gone home, she is worried that Jesus has been taken by grave robbers, and she stands outside the tomb weeping. As she weeps for her lost Jesus, she eventually peers in to see two angels dressed in white, sitting on the stone slab where Jesus had been laid 3 days before. Do you hear the raindrops hitting the roof? Can you hear? All the kids are looking up. Can you hear the rain hitting the roof? As Mary is standing outside the tomb, she weeps. Turning around, she sees another standing in the doorway to the tomb, thinking he's perhaps some kind of gardener or worker in the cemetery. And she sees two figures clothed in white, sitting on the stone slab where Jesus had been laid only 3 days before. When the figure standing in the doorway speaks her name, she calls to him Rabboni, or teacher, or rabbi. So what does Mary do? She goes back to the disciples and she tells them, I have seen him. I have seen Jesus. So on this day of resurrection, I want to give thanks to Nancy Pittman and Feasting on the Word for the focus of our reflections this morning. Let me ask you three questions. What would you do? Would you be like the beloved disciple and simply believe? These are the ones who always believe the best about others, even in the face of bad behaviors. These are the ones who offer to help for habitat builds, or take time to work in soup kitchens, or offer to give help to a stranger in need. These are the ones who don't need empirical proof in the resurrection to believe in it. Now, to be honest, sometimes their eternal optimism can be rather annoying. But sometimes their faith can be a beacon in the dark night of the soul for the rest of us, calling us to a deeper faith through the eyes of their own faith. Well, what about Simon Peter, with his complex human emotions, standing there in the empty tomb? These are the ones who harbor jealousy of the beloved disciple and end up resenting those who receive blessings. Did you notice in today's reading that Simon Peter and the beloved disciple were running to see who could get to the tomb first? Competing to see who could see the empty tomb first. These are the ones who are so worried about what the other guy is getting that they fail to see the gifts and blessings they've already received. These are the ones who make promises only to fail in keeping them. But maybe, just maybe, these are also the ones who, having experienced their own Lazarus moment in the past, believe in the possibility of a fresh start or a do-over, and have hope that the miracle of a new life is always possible. But what about Mary, standing outside the tomb alone, crying for her dead and missing teacher? She can't think straight. She doesn't know what to expect anymore. She thought she was going to the tomb to anoint his body. These are the ones who spend too much time on the past. These are the ones whose eyes are blinded by the losses in life. These are the ones whose expectations are always met because they don't really have any. These are the ones to whom a broken heart is one that hears the voice of Jesus speak their name. These are the ones to whom angels speak. And sometimes, these are the ones who have the courage to go and tell others what this new and resurrected life in Jesus is all about, even if they have to go through danger all alone. So what would you do? What would you do? Let me change that. I'm going to change that sentence up a little this morning. Not what would you do, what will you do? What will you do in the face of this new life found for you in an empty tomb? And may all God's people say, Amen.